CliffCentral.com.
Love that. It's Swally with Post Malone, Sunflower. Such a cute song. I do like that. Makes me feel good. 5 minutes after 7, CliffCentral.com. We are live and we're here to look after you this Wednesday morning. I hope you're off to a good start. There are so many things to get stuck into today, and we're going to talk about some of the stories in the news in a moment or two. If you are wondering where Gord Laws is, he's not in today, but we have Bulelo, we have Sia, we have Mfundo, and we have your messages and calls coming in loud and clear. So, for example, Ali has this to say. Guys, I am so irritated. I turn off during Mbulelo's sport because he says the same thing 50 times in different ways. All right, there's good some feedback. Well, it's not good feedback.
Yeah.
But you're taking it like a man. Can we please get Mo, who was on yesterday as a regular? He was fantastic. Okay, nice feedback there.
All right. Yeah.
All right, a few things that are going on that we need to talk about today. Sia, do you want to start off with your laundry list?
Yeah, so just another thing to add on to things that you might be wanting to complain about, but granted, this is sound. So if it's not load shedding, it seems that a crime that's on the rise in South Africa right now is the stealing of backup batteries, and the police are warning against this. Backup batteries in cell phone towers. That is.
Hell. Mm-hmm. People stealing those?
Yep. According to Jan 2020 stats alone, 703 batteries were stolen from MTN service stations. And so these are essential because, you know, during load shedding, these batteries are the ones that are keeping us connected. So if you've probably been sensing or getting a dip in signal, it's probably because of something like this. So MTN is speaking out with the police saying that these crime syndicates are stealing its backup batteries and selling them for as little as 5,000 rand. Meanwhile, the minimum cost of a brand new battery is 28,000 rands. So according to its investigations, these batteries are necessary for keeping operations online during load shedding, and ultimately they are being used as an alternative source of energy. An MTN spokesperson has said, we have seen most of them crossing borders, hence we approached SAPS and border authorities to intervene. And please note that these batteries are not for sale to the public, only permitted companies can use them. But well, that's not stopping some gangs from making what they want to happen.
Yeah,
703 batteries, you know, stolen in 1 month.
One thing we're really good at in this country is stealing. We've managed to steal everything out of parastatals. I'm saying we, like as a country, but it's mostly the government. And then a couple of opportunist criminals like these guys who are stealing backup batteries. Although I wouldn't be surprised if that is even like an organized thing. Mm. You know? Because someone is probably the kingpin who's got the brains, who goes, if we steal these batteries from the cell phone towers, we can sell them for 5 grand, even though they cost four times that to buy properly. And we can sell them to people for like 5 grand. We'll make a fortune. And these towers are everywhere, right? I mean, I always wonder why when load shedding happens, the cell phone towers, I mean, sometimes your signal goes down as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably because the batteries have been stolen.
Look,
we're really good at stealing in this country. Let's give ourselves a round of applause, shall we?
It's not something I'm proud of. No. Criminals are criminals for a reason, and they'll always just get around any sort of security measure that's put up there. But look, it's not even MTN who's affected by this. Telkom is also complaining about seeing a rise in crime affecting them. Most recently, three suspects were apprehended in October last year in a joint operation that targeted Telkom and Bidvest. Protea Coin, because some gangs were targeting them and tampering with essential infrastructure.
Right.
And cable theft is also sadly on the rise as well. It increased over December and Jan, with 109 incidences in January alone that were reported.
I watched Rick and Morty last night. It's been something I've been waiting to do for months, and I had it, you know, ready to watch. I had it ready to go, and I pressed play last night and I watched all 5 episodes in one sitting, and man, is that show brilliant. I love it. And I know, because I watched all the previous seasons, it's so good. I knew what I was going into. And it's just such a great show. They've got Elon Musk, who makes a like a guest cameo
Is it really him? Like
it's his voice. It's really him. Yeah. But it's called. He's called Elon Tusk. And instead of Tesla, it's Tuskler. It's hilarious.
If he can even make fun of himself, then that's fun.
What a brilliant marketing tool for him to get onto a show like that, which has such a cult following. All right, Mbulelo, you always get loads of feedback, so here's some for you this morning. Mebelelo is the best. Love your opinions, Michelle.
Thank you, Michelle.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, lovely.
That's sweet.
Imbulelo, this is... yeah, some of them get it right, some of them don't. Nomabulelo, would you rather have a biased judge sending your daughter to prison or a group of people with differing confirmation bias working together to make a decision?
That's an excellent question. Let me give you an answer to that. I care about statistics, and I would rather take the chance with somebody who's been trained for over 20 years to be compelled. Because we have to remember, people are more moral through society. So they've compelled the judge to sort of wean away his biases. They've trained him to not think with his heart and be passionate. It's be cold, what do the facts say? And let's head that way with decisions. Whereas my hypothetical truck driver, they barely passed high school. Like, I don't want him making important decisions. I'm sorry.
You know, poor truck driver.
No, I'm sorry. Like,
and then they say, I have something against strippers. You have something against strippers.
You do have something very against strippers.
No.
Yes, you do.
I will kindly decline that in this light.
No, you do have something against strippers. Oh, yeah, everybody knows it.
Yeah. No, that's a fact.
Anyway, your point.
And Mbulelo, does that go under the Mbulelo philosophy minute, or are we saving that for later?
I let's save it for later.
Are you sure? This comment from Mbulelo comes from classical philosophy.
Okay, well, we can do it. So Socrates.
Of course.
Spare us. Nobody's sitting on the edge of their seat waiting
for that.
All right.
Gareth, well, you did say we're good at stealing. And look, this is a story that I first heard of.
So I wish we weren't.
Yesterday, I was digging up as much as I could because I find this fascinating. But a woman has stolen 4 million rands in cash. She was last seen in July last year, and we're only catching on to this now.
What a story. She just put it in rubbish bags and loaded it into a car and disappeared. And we don't know where she is, right?
But you know what? Let's actually say kudos to her. If you also got 4 million rands in cash, I think the trick is get out of here.
She worked for a cash and transit company.
Yes.
What?
She worked for SBV Services, and police are still currently on the hunt for this woman who allegedly stole 4 million rands in cash from her former employer. Mm-hmm. She has not reported for duty since the incident.
Sure.
And her name, we actually know her name. It's Batobile. Don't say anything.
No, not Batabi.
Thank you. Batobile Mlangeni reportedly stuffed millions of rands in cash into rubbish bags while she was still working at SBVs. She was at the cash depot at the Mall of Africa on the 15th of July last year. She's 29 years old, and she reportedly cut open two bulk cash bags and then put the money in a few refuse bags and casually just sauntered out of the building. No one checked her. No one asked any questions. No one wanted to find out what are these massive bags that you're walking out with. She placed them in a trolley and she walked off. And these events were reportedly recorded on CCTV footage, and that was the last we saw of Batobile.
She's a genius.
Well, she is.
Right? I felt a little bad wanting to commend her when
she's not making herself obvious and conspicuous by spending all that money in a very garish way.
Mm-mm.
So the smart thing to do is to take that money. And now you've got to find ways to launder it because it's obviously in cash.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't just go and deposit it in your bank. That's going to be very suspicious. So she's got to work carefully. I mean, it's really, you've got to think very carefully about how you operate now. It's quite something.
In a statement that was issued by the company yesterday, they appealed to members of the public for any information which may assist police in their investigation. They said this is not a cash center, but a collection facility for cash collected from tenants in the mall. A case was lodged with the SAPS when the incident occurred, and SBV's risk and compliance team is continuing to work closely with the SAPS on the investigation. Someone must know something, right?
Surely.
A friend of Batobile, family members,
see,
next of kin.
Usually you get tripped up when you've done it with someone. If you have a partner in crime, then sometimes the stories don't measure up and something slips out or you get caught out or, you know, it can go wrong. The only foolproof way to do it is do it all on your own. And I don't know that she could carry all this cash on her own. She obviously would have got into a car. Maybe there was a getaway driver. Maybe there was a friend of hers involved at some point. Someone's going to make a mistake. So she's got to be on tenterhooks the whole time.
It's really powerful if she did do this all on her own.
Ah, amazing.
And I mean, maybe her family genuinely doesn't know anything.
That's it. That's what's so clever. Is she can keep her mouth shut, then she'll survive.
She could have paid someone to
take the money,
to buy a ticket for her. She could have been out of the country by now.
I often wonder, like yesterday Pumi was saying, that, you know, when she went to have her grandmother buried, the guy there only works in cash. And he probably, you know, in the middle of the month when the social grants are paid out, he probably has hundreds of thousands of rands in cash that he takes in a single day, maybe. You think about that. Where does he store it? There's a lot of cash in this economy, and it still makes its way around.
So I don't know if you know the ZCC church, Gareth?
Yes, of course.
Sia?
The one, yeah, they wear a badge.
Moria.
They do wear a badge,
yes. But the way you said it.
Why are you laughing?
So I saw
an old lady walking with a kid in hand, and he was wearing the uniform.
Oh.
You know, with the hat and everything and the badge. And the kid was probably like 4.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So being from Limpopo, I know people obviously that.
Oh, sorry. Today you identify as someone from Limpopo.
Yeah.
Okay, not Xhosa.
No, well, Halima Mutlante did something good the other day, so now I'm...
Okay.
I flip-flopped.
Yeah, just wanted to clarify.
Yes. So I identify as... Sorry. Fine. I'd like to express myself as a cisgender, Pedi man today.
Got you.
Okay, all right.
Good. And the floor is yours.
So...
We should start the show with that. Today, hi, I'm Gareth. Today, my pronouns are him and his, and I identify as a white male.
Hi, my name is Sia. My pronouns are awesome, and I was hatched out of a disco ball.
Oh, good Lord. We can edit that out. That's brilliant.
That's much better.
That's brilliant. That was brilliant.
All right, so as a Pedi man, get on with it.
Yes, having heard of Lekganyane, the big god, whatever figure they view him as there, when he deposits his cash, this is how much cash this guy collects. 4 banks have to close for the day. That's how much cash he brings. They close. Could you imagine?
What is this, like collection money?
After they go for the pilgrimage?
Yes.
That weekend? Maria.
And he can spend that money however he likes.
It's his money.
No tax.
4 banks are out of business for a day.
I should have gone into the business of religion.
I have this on good authority. On great authority, actually.
What a dummy I am. Sitting here trying to do broadcasting and trying to start a religion is the best thing. You don't have to give any of it back. You don't have to explain where you've put it. It's tax free.
You have exemption in court. Oh,
man. That's wild.
That is some business. I'm an idiot. We're all idiots. We should all have gone into the religion business. And there are enough people. There are enough schmucks who'll give you money. Morning, Cliff Central team. Here's a little bit of feedback for us from Denzel. Denzel says, I just finished listening to your discussion with Herman Mashaba, and wow, you were right. What a great show. He sounds like an amazing person, just trying to do the right thing. I sincerely hope he draws many votes in 2021 and then in 2024, and we can have a better South Africa. I hope he gets the support, and if so, that he's able to deliver.
Okay.
That's very nice. Yeah, if you want to hear what Denzel's talking about, you can go and listen to the podcast. It's available on cliffcentral.com. Mm. The lady that stole the $4 million should start a church and give herself tithes over a period of time until all the money in her account is tax-free.
Smart.
Very good. That's very, very sharp advice from Jason.
Look, I was counting. It's been 6 months since this happened. I don't even think she's around anymore.
No, she's probably skipped the country.
Yeah.
She's probably like in Mozambique, chilling at some beach resort. You guys tease Mumbolelwe about his philosophical rantings. I would totally listen to an hour's podcast of him about philosophy. You've got fans, Mbolelwe.
No way. Mbolelwe now sounds like something from the Jungle Book.
You guys need to let up on the Mbolelaleo hating comments. Your musty old asses have not even started to live yet. Give the guy his ropes and props for being an athlete and a philosopher and all the stuff he's doing. Sia was also over the plane back in the day, and look at him now.
The term over the plane?
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but
I don't
okay.
know either.
Thank you very
musty
much.
Ass sure. Musty, yeah, musty old ass no.
That is from Anushka. All right, then here's Tobile who says, politics, oh, hang on. Bulelo. Ben used to, he got it right, eh?
Oh,
Ben
okay.
used to, Bulelo. You straight up swear at his sports report critics. Don't hold back, homie. Tune them.
I'm a very secure, in fact, I might have an inflated self-worth. So I think any negative feedback, if I can't grow from it, what am I doing?
I disagree with Mubalilililololololo repeating himself in sports. Sia, however, and his level of redundancy drives me insane sometimes.
Oh, okay.
That's Marcus pitting Sia up against Mbulelo. Listening to you guys in this morning's discussion about the preparations you go through prior to a visit to the dentist, you have to understand what my patients go through. And they're always apologetic. Promise, neither the dentist nor I am judging you, Dr. Robin. Of course, Dr. Robin looks into women's vaginas for a living.
Wow.
So there's no amount of prep she says that you can do. I'm it makes sure. no difference. She doesn't judge.
Can you qualify that a little more, please? Mm. You just reduced her.
That's what she does.
Suggest that.
Yeah. Jenny says, I loved the Herman podcast, but I was furious. My blood boiled. The substation there wasn't. Well, there was a story in the podcast which you can listen to about the Guptas getting a lease, a 100-year lease on a massive piece of property here in Sandton, which they never paid for because they were politically connected and title deeds and all the rest of it. It's worth looking at. Are you guys still reviewing The Bachelor? I noticed the new season is now airing. Does anyone want to answer that for Hucho?
Yeah, we said we'll get started.
Okay. Hi, team. Just wanted to follow up on Friday's conversation about the sensitive generation and people living in the world today. Please stop comparing weakness with being a pussy. Pussy's not weak. Pussy's power. Pussy runs the world. Sure. All right.
Okay. Let's not get that twisted.
That is from Judice. All right. Very good. Mabalelelelo is great. Please chain him to the chair so he doesn't leave. We love him. See, Mbulelo. Lots of feedback. That's from Kens.
Lots and of feedback and lots of variations of your name.
And our final message before we move on to other stories is this is from Marcus. He says, side note, I finished watching Sex Education last night. Such a good series. I kept thinking Sia is the real life Eric. I have to watch that show. People have been telling me how good it is.
Yeah, you know, it's gotten to a slump for me because I think they're on the third season now. Mm. I feel like I've lost that. I've missed that train. Even though, yes, you can catch up whenever and binge on Netflix. But if you're on the third season already, I might as well not.
Okay.
A friend sent me a 10-minute YouTube video clip because this is a separate friend from the one we were talking about yesterday, Sia, who is a massive fan of yours and goes, yeah, this could be – Sia should have auditioned for this role.
Okay.
So
okay. I thought Sia was Roger from –
from American Dad. Oh my God.
Yes, right? You only realize that now?
Mbulelo, you can. You can.
Yes, right?
Oh my God.
Yes. He is, though. If you've never watched American Dad, you'll see CH. Go
I think
up
we've broken Mbulelo.
Because that's like one of my favorite shows. And you've nailed it.
Mbulelo, I've never seen you so excited.
Oh my God.
You see the comparison.
Oh my God.
I think we've broken him. I honestly have.
Yeah, you've seen what Roger looks like. He's an ugly little grey alien with no legs and a very long neck.
I think if he didn't look so pudgy, I wouldn't take such offense to it. But he just looks... I mean, couldn't he just be slim and sleek? But
it's the way... That's...
See, it's him.
It's Roger.
It's like the writers. It's like the writers of that show met Sia and decided to craft an alien out of him.
Seth MacFarlane based his best character ever off you.
Mbulelo, you have lit up so much based on this.
Okay.
And then last thing to touch on quickly is, you know, they always talk about 10,000 hours and how really it's so rare to be an overnight success. This is an interesting list to look back at some of the successful and just so happen to be some of the richest people in the world and how early they started in some of the things that they've done. So listen to some of the earliest like innovation that some of the well-known tech execs started developing at a young age. So just starting with Bill Gates, did you know that back when he was a teenager, he actually first Harris developed this course scheduling software while he was still in high school.
Really?
He was 16 years old at the time, and he developed this software. He says back then he would spend about 18 hours a day working on this, to the point where actually it garnered some interest in his community. You think about it, what it takes to be successful.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bill Gates wasn't out playing in the mud or yeah. having sex with girls, that's for sure.
It wasn't binge-watching series.
No.
Yeah. A local company in Michigan, TRW, actually first took notice of his skills, and they were interested in his software. So... That's how you become a mini Bill Gates. Mark Zuckerberg, even, yes, we know that the fact that he started Facebook while he was still in university, started something back in 2002 as well. It was an app actually similar to the likes of Spotify today. It was called Snaps, and it actually caught the attention of Microsoft even back in 2002. He was offered $1 million for it. Microsoft even offered him a job to take up Snaps. He ended up actually just creating the Snaps with Adam D'Angelo, and so they wanted to go to college. So they said, nah, no thanks for that job. We want to focus on college.
That's still how Mark Zuckerberg laughs.
But I mean, I think if you are talented, you're talented, because they decided to make the Snaps platform free to use. And then just casually, 1 year later, Mark Zuckerberg launched what we now know as Facebook today. Elon Musk, actually...
Evil man, that.
Elon Musk, before all of the Tesla fame, while he was still in South Africa at 12 years old, created a code called Blastar. And Blastar is a space-themed video game, and thanks to the powers of the internet, you can actually still research it and you can play it online. Blastar. It's a video game that some people compare to Space Invaders, and he designed it at 12 years old, and he says the game's mission is to take down an alien fleet before it defeats you. So
then a tunnel boring machine. Okay.
You want to beat Gary.
We want to beat Gary. Yeah. He's not a patient little fellow, and we want that will be victory. Victory is beating the snail.
That's how he sounds. Still very South African sounding. I mean, even Charlize Theron, I mentioned this at the...
Charlize Theron. Yes.
Even in her case, I watched that Bombshell movie, and she starts the movie with a voiceover, and it's a black screen.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear it's... that little bit of a South African thing. She's a really good mimic of Megyn Kelly in this movie.
But she's from Benoni, Garrett. There's no running away from that.
There's no running away from Benoni.
No.
And then lastly, co-founder...
You can take the girl out of Benoni.
But never the...
But you can never take Benoni out of the girl, right?
And then lastly, co-founder of Twitter and CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, when he was 15 years old, he actually wrote a code and developed programming for a taxi dispatching. So very similar to what we know to Lyft and Uber today. Dorsey was very interested in dispatching software as it grew, and he decided to create a startup back in Oakland in California.
So what are you really telling us, Sia, that unless you've come up with something by now, you're not really going to come up with anything
basically
later on? You're just a loser.
No, let's just not hope for this one in a million thing, and let's not make it sound like an overnight success. If these people were creating things at 15 years old and in the early 2000s,
yeah,
and no, we're sitting discussing
again, these are brilliant people who you can say whatever you like. You could be some loser like Bernie Sanders,
but you
can't hate these billionaires. They have made everyone's life better.
If you're in a commune camp or a cult right now,
yeah,
you're probably not going to.
If you're sitting around on other people's furniture and you're smoking weed and you're doing nothing useful in the world, then chances are you're going to grow up to be a socialist because you think that billionaires are bad. And that they don't deserve the money that they've made. And they made it off the backs and the sweat of workers. But the fact is, you hear these guys in the stories that Sia's just told us now. They were all working on this stuff long before they had big companies. They didn't stop working. day in, day out. It's amazing. Yes, good morning.
Charlize Theron.
What?
Charlize Theron.
That's how she says her name.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real.
Benoni.
All right, it is time for us to find out about women in investment. This is something we've been excited to talk about for a long time. She has been associated with WDBIH for 20 years as one of the founding members and a non-executive director. And we're going to find out just now about Faith Kanyile and see what she can teach us about investment. Also find out about those Section 12J companies, and that's all very exciting. All of that and more coming up on cliffcentral.com. That's next. Stick around. Your chance to find out how everything works, and maybe you discover something interesting and useful, and perhaps you even want to get investing. Now, wouldn't that be exciting? You can. It is now just about time for us to find out about something that I know we've been excited about for a long time. It is to talk to Faith Kanyile, who's the CEO and director of WBIH. That is the WDB Investment Holdings Group. And she's here today to talk to us about, among other things, women in investment. She's been associated with WDBIH for over 20 years. Her extensive experience in financial services, in corporate and investment banking, in strategy development and leadership are some of the things we want to talk to her about. How are you, Faith, first of all, and thank you for coming to see us.
I'm good. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you've spent a long time in senior and executive positions. You were at Standard Bank. You were in corporate investment banking from 2001 to 2013. You also serve on the board of Discovery Limited, Safari RSA Limited, Transcend, and Seed Engine. So this is a busy week, I'm sure, as all weeks are for you, because you've got meetings, you've got important people to see. What is your day-to-day schedule like? Does it vary from day to day?
Yes, it does, but basically it starts quite early, you know, around 6 in the morning, and basically, you know, do some gyming exercise, you know, or running, and then, yeah, then hit the road, go to the office, and then it's meetings after meetings.
Now, you were also at Brait Private Equity for 5 years before you joined Standard Bank. How did you start off, though? I mean, where did it all begin for you?
So for me, you know, it all began, I guess, when I was still growing up. I grew up in KwaZulu-Natal. I was born there. And my parents were in business. You know, they ran a small shop in the community. And I guess that's where the seed of becoming a businesswoman was planted. So I went on to study economics and finance in university. You know, studied MBA. And basically from there, you know, I started my career in private equity and then investment banking. And then, you know, develop from there to being a leader and basically doing what I'm doing today.
Now, it sounds like such a cliched thing, because it probably is true, but investment banking and the world of finance is quite a male environment, right? There are not a lot of women, and the women that are in there are fiercely competitive. And for a lot of people, not just women, it's a very intimidating world. Did you find it that way, or was it always exciting for you in the kind of environment that you thrived in?
It definitely was challenging, you know, Gareth. And I mean, I remember my first job, you know, when I joined Brait. I joined them when they just started the company. I was basically, you know, the first woman, and for a while, you know, only woman. Surrounded by men, but I think, you know, my training and my attitude actually helped me to, you know, to go through the challenges, and eventually also just to really get to understand people as people, rather than generalizing and saying, oh, you're a man, therefore this is how you think about women, you know. So you really have to go through that journey of really just, you know, developing a relationship with human beings, but also at the same time, you know, you have to understand that, you know, there are inequalities, and you need to be prepared to be active and to, you know, get involved and to really, you know, fight for women where
you can. It's almost more incumbent on you to make an even greater contribution and to know your own value.
Yes.
When you're in that position, right?
Yes.
Now, this is amazing. I was interested in the recent analysis by BCG that showed that where women and men were participating equally as entrepreneurs, global GDP could increase as much as 3% to 6%.
Yeah.
Achieving this could boost the global economy by $2.5 trillion, according to this survey by BCG. Now, what do you think it would take to enable this in South Africa, where analysis shows that the entrepreneurial gender gap is in fact widening? Rather jarring, that's considering Roland Berger's work, Women in Africa, Entrepreneurship, has posed that the continent is one of the highest female entrepreneur rates globally. We obviously know that these things are considerations that are worth spending a bit of time on in South Africa.
Yeah.
If we could bring more women into business, and if we could find ways to encourage women entrepreneurs and also support local businesses, this could perhaps be a major cash injection to the economy.
Yes. And Gareth, you obviously are aware of the challenges that this economy faces, where, you know, we're growing less than 1%. But I think the biggest untapped potential is exactly, you know, the females, you know, because, I mean, if you, for example, look at the women's absorption or participation in the workplace, they represent 52% of the population, but their participation is about 45%. So that's one. And then if you look at their representation as leaders on boards, on the JSE listed companies, you know, women's representation is only 20%, and obviously the rest is male. So I think the point of the fact that, you know, we've got more than 52% of the potential not being tapped in South Africa, for me, it's a huge missed opportunity. And I think if we can really, you know, get to the bottom understanding of, you know, putting in place policies that can encourage the participation of women, you know, from probably government, you know, putting in policies, but also business must start to embrace diversity and inclusivity. Because to your point, you know, there are numerous studies that have been done to demonstrate that if you are more inclusive, if you embrace diversity, you know, the impact on your bottom line and eventually in the economy, it's hugely positive. But I think we're just not doing it, because I think we really need to change the mindsets, Gareth.
And people, Faith, it's not just, this is not some cosmetic or political thing. Like,
no.
What you're saying is that the numbers show that this can be very beneficial to your business. So it's not as if this is some feminist 1980s women are being left out of the economy argument. And there are obviously lots of women who are doing extremely well in South Africa at the moment, and plenty who have made their way, regardless of the obstacles and the adversity.
Yeah,
but do you believe in a glass ceiling?
Unfortunately, I do believe in a glass ceiling, because, I mean, you know, you have seen cases whereby, you know, at, like, you know, if you look at women's participation, for example, in you know, the management levels in South Africa. So if you start from the junior management, you will see that there's actually equal representation between men and women. So it's 50-50. Then you move up to the senior management levels. There, you know, you see the ratios are 27 or 30% to 70% female to male. Then you move up to CEO positions. There, it's shocking, because if you, for example, look at the JSE, you've got less than 3% of CEOs, you know, being females. So,
I mean,
what explains
that's a tiny number.
Exactly, correct. So, I mean, so for me, it really, you know, you need to ask yourself, why is that?
But you're not saying utopia would be 50-50. That's not what you're asking for. You're just saying equal opportunity. And women CEOs, and obviously, you know, we come from a history where women weren't necessarily in work. They were usually the homemakers.
Yes.
And historically, women have not had the roles in business that they are able to occupy now.
Yeah.
So surely over time, this will get better?
You know, I mean, I think it will get better, but also it requires interventions. As you know, things don't just happen. I mean, we need to make these, you know, things happen, because, I mean, if you look at South Africa, and, you know, since our democracy more than 25 years ago, we definitely have made progress, you know, correct. So I don't want to sit here and say, you know, we've done nothing about, you know, promoting gender equality. We've definitely done something, but I'm just saying that there is much more than that we need to do. And for us to be in a different position, say 10 years from now, we can't be using the same approach that we've been using over the past 25 years. Because in my view, I don't think the approach that we've been using has really gotten us to where we can be, like the potential that where we can be, we're not even close to our potential. So that's really my argument to say, for us to get to close to reaching our potential, to get, you know, this economy to really be inclusive and to get, you know, women's participation to be meaningful and to increase, we have to do things differently.
What would you say to a young woman who is starting off in business and is intimidated by perhaps the workplace, especially in a financial institution, by men, by perhaps the stories that we hear about sexual exploitation, we hear about a lot of this. What would you say to those women? What's the best advice you could give them, especially if they were your daughter or a friend of daughter of a friend?
I think the first thing that I would say is that, you know, they really have to know their worth. Because I think people do funny things, Gareth, because they don't have, they've got very low self-esteem, very low, you know, self-confidence. They don't believe in themselves. And then they end up thinking that for them to go up in their careers, they have to do funny things. So first things first, know your worth. Know that you are worth something. And then, you know, obviously, once you know that, you know, you obviously have to really work on yourself. You have to believe in yourself, and you have to continuously self-develop or improve yourself, because the only way for you to be relevant is that, you know, you really have to continuously grow by doing a lot of things, you know, by reading, by, you know, getting into leadership training or leadership development programs. Mm-hmm. It's really about, you know, continuously self-improving yourself. But I think lastly, Gareth, you really have to find a mentor. You need to find someone who's going to guide you. You know, we're not an island as human beings. So find someone that, you know, can guide you, can mentor you, someone that you can bounce off ideas with. And when you've got challenges, someone that, you know, you trust that you can talk to.
What are some of the best resources that have helped you along your way? I mean, you mentioned these courses and self-development. What have you done along your way to corporate success?
I think, I mean, I've really done quite a lot of, first of all, like just self-development, you know, just knowing who I am, you know, and really, you know, understanding my strengths and as well as my weaknesses, and really focus more on capitalizing on my strength. Because I think we spend too much time just sort of like, you know, focusing on things that we're not good at. So I've really spent a lot of time focusing on things that, you know, that I'm good at. And also, Gareth, I have mentors, I've got coaches, I've got people that are supporting me through my journey. And lastly, I really try to read a lot. You know, I read widely, not just in my field, but, you know, outside of my field, because, you know, you really have to be aware of your environment, political, social, globally, you know, for you to, you know, to be relevant and to contribute meaningfully.
Now, we are in an interesting situation in South Africa. You mentioned already that our growth rate's very low. There are obviously gaps in South Africa for people to come up with great new products and great new services and to solve people's problems, obviously, which is that's the best way to do business, because people are prepared to pay if you develop something that can solve their problems. How well placed do you think South African women are to take advantage of these situations?
I think we are extremely well placed. I mean, I think if you look at some of the initiatives that first, you know, government and then, you know, the private sector have put in place. For example, you know, the Section 12J schemes whereby, business and government are investing or are promoting the investment in small and medium-sized businesses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we all know, I think, you know, you do find a lot of women in that small and medium-sized business space. So I think the fact that there is now funding available and also there is enabling legislation really creates opportunities for those entrepreneurs that have got innovative ideas and that can really, to your point, you know, come up with ideas that, that are solving community or social issues. So I think women really just need to understand that the opportunities are there, funding is there, but they also have to make sure that, you know, they are prepared and also they link themselves to the ecosystem.
I think lots of us can tell from your CV that you've been to many places and done many interesting things. What is it that keeps you waking up early and keeps you excited about work?
The work that I do at WDB is really, you know, for me, it's such a privilege to be in a position whereby, you know, I am making an impact on the lives of others. And as you know, at WDB, we were founded almost 30 years ago to really support women in rural areas by providing them, you know, microfinance and then helping them to grow their businesses, but most important, to improve their lives and get themselves out of poverty. And for me, that's really what keeps me, you know, alive, to know that I'm not just waking up to earn a paycheck at the end of the month. I'm actually making an impact on someone's life.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. And thank you for sharing your story with us. It is Faith Kanyile's story that we're hearing this morning, CEO and Director of WDBIH, that's WDB Investment Holdings, and she's been associated with them now for over 20 years. It's a long time. You're not bored at all, huh?
No, I'm not.
Loving it.
Yes.
It's amazing. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Gareth. What a pleasure to see you. It's time for us to introduce you to the second in our series on Stop to Start, which is a brilliant new initiative from ABSA. They're doing wonderful work to help young men develop role models, to help young men figure out a way forward in a world where sometimes they feel like they don't count, where sometimes they feel that they've been discounted. And we've just spoken about women in business. Now it's time to turn our attention to the young men. More than 1,000 of these young men and their teachers were positively impacted by this new initiative, proving again that ABSA is a purpose-led organization that brings possibilities to their customers and the communities where they operate. We spoke to key stakeholders in the Soweto leg of the activation. I went through with Sian Mbulelo, and we managed to meet some of these young men and women as well. In this case, we speak to Jenny Moore, who is the GM for Brand Design and Group Functions Marketing at ABSA. I asked her to explain how Stop to Start is one of their priorities in playing a role in putting basic building blocks in place to ensure that young South Africans have the opportunity to reimagine their futures. And here she is to tell you a little bit more.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Well, let's talk about where we are today, because we're sitting in Dobsonville Stadium in Soweto, and this is the venue for something really special that's happening. Most people in December are thinking, oh, holidays, family, a break from work. And here ABSA is making a difference in a place where we know one of the biggest issues, not just here but countrywide, is gender-based violence, the fact that so many boys grew up without fathers, so many boys grew up without good male role models. And we know the importance of this, and it's something that I think many people will be surprised about. But once you've explained the reasons why ABSA is involved in this, they might not be so surprised anymore, and they'll realize how maybe more people should be involved in what you're doing here today. Who are these kids? What's the story? How did you guys get involved? Give me the background.
So it started a couple of months ago when the whole theme of sexual and gender-based violence really came to the forefront around about September, October, and I think it started to enter the national dialogue. And as an organization, we firmly believe in this notion of bringing possibility to life. And what we believe is that when you're a victim of sexual and gender-based violence, that's robbing you of your possibility.
Yeah.
And we wanted to be part of stopping that. We cannot stand for that happening in the communities that we live in. And so we started with an initiative called #Stop. You may have seen some of that activation through
Wearing the badge.
We're very proud of this as a colleague engagement platform, getting our own people to engage through the He for She pledge.
Okay. But what is the He for She pledge, if you just want to give us some background?
So the He for She program is a United Nations program, and we've taken that stand within the organization right the way from our CEO, Renee van Wijk, down to say that men in our organization are standing in solidarity with women. They're standing up to say no to violence. They're standing up to protect women and fight that fight. But it wasn't just about what we do internally. We also believe that we need to play a shaping role in our communities.
Right.
And so we need to do something. We can't just watch this happen. And part of that was starting the hashtag Stop Movement, which was about creating awareness. Often we see these social issues rise up in popularity for a short period of time, then they disappear. And we said we don't want that to happen with this. It's important enough to keep this conversation going. And that's where it started. But having a conversation isn't enough.
No.
So you've got to start doing something. And what you're seeing today is our first step in being part of the solution.
Well, it's incredible. You've got a bunch of kids of various ages here, but they're mostly young boys. And they are here to meet some of their heroes, soccer stars, people in the community who've already, you know, raised their heads above the parapet and kind of done extremely interesting and very successful things. So there's some people to look up to. But there are also workbooks. I see you guys have got some speakers here who will hopefully, like Charlie Peterson, be able to engage with these kids on some emotional level, to connect with them about the things that have made their lives sometimes very difficult, sometimes less than optimal, in terms of home life, family life, school life, how they see themselves in society, what they think of themselves from a self-esteem point of view, how they identify. And you've got a little workbook here, which I paged through just a moment ago. And it really does dig deep. I mean, a lot of this stuff would be difficult for people who think they're okay to deal with. And if you can start asking these questions at the right age, it can really be the beginning of healing or the beginning of progress and defining yourself much later on in life. How did you put the program together?
So as a bank, we don't believe that we have all the answers to solving these issues, and we need to work with the experts. And so this engagement with the foundation, with Charlie Peterson's foundation, Growing Up Without a Father, really just all fell in place at the right time. What we were looking for was someone that we could work with that understood these issues, that understood how to reach the children, and our role in that was to create the platform for that to happen. So within this foundation, we found what we think is a really great program that, as you say, it touches on some of the issues that these young boys face on a daily basis. And our objective out of this is to really affirm a positive identity, to say, boy, child, you're worth something. You have worth.
Yeah, I mean, especially because what we're seeing in most of the media reports around gender-based violence and all the rest of it is that men are trash, that there isn't a place in society for strong men anymore, that unless, you know, you're raised by just women around you, you're going to be a horrible man and there's toxic masculinity. I mean, the inverse is probably true, but the fact is that a strong guy doesn't have a lot to look for, to identify with in the modern mix of stuff that's going on out there. What's brave, I suppose, of ABSA in this respect is the fact that you guys have tackled this very difficult, sometimes very controversial subject, and you've decided to get involved. But a lot of people would ask, why a bank? Why would you want to take, you know, the trouble and time to get involved in an issue which is maybe not so obvious? It doesn't have to do with finance. It doesn't have to do with money. It doesn't have to do with people's ability to save or to spend or to use a bank or any of that stuff. What is the purpose for ABSA being involved in this?
I think it comes back to the fact that we believe fundamentally in our organizational purpose, that everybody has some innate possibility or potential within them. And we want to play a part in bringing that to life. it goes beyond the products and the services that we deliver. We see ourselves having a broader social responsibility to be involved in part of making those solutions come to life. And this is one of them.
You have kids?
I do.
Okay. Boys?
I have three boys and a daughter.
Wow. Okay, so then you're well placed. I mean, what kind of a world would you like your boys to grow up in, and what kind of boys would you like them to grow into when they become men?
I think my husband and I have spent a lot of time instilling a sense of potential within our boys. We want them to grow up believing that they have a positive impact on the world and they can have that. Likewise, we make it a big focus area in our family to know how to treat a girl. The old age of chivalry is still very much alive in our home, and I believe in it firmly, because it's not about subservience, but it is about treating a woman with respect and showing her that you respect her in the little ways.
Yeah, and for your daughter, I mean, what do you think the world of the future is like for girls?
I think unless we start to do something right now, the future is pretty scary. And I think that's what gives me the energy to be doing this at this time of year. I want to be part of a solution that says my daughter can go out in the big wide world and not have to watch over her shoulder every moment, that she's not going to be worried about every man she encounters. Is he going to beat her up? Is he going to abuse her? Is he going to commit some sort of atrocious act? That she has a positive world to grow up in.
Well, thank you, Jenny. Pleasure to see you, and thank you very much for what you guys are doing. I think it's tremendous, and this will obviously be something which can live on and speak to that purpose that you mentioned earlier. Thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.